I brought you here because I believe you can be trusted with a potential longer-term collaboration.
Rick folded his arms and waited.
You actually got my number earlier in the demon realm. The point is to be a flashy idiot obsessed with himself and his petty little secrets, skilled enough to give a position, but harmless. But I'm not that person. I'm not even as rich as I pretend to be. I've spent years preparing, and this little contest is just the opportunity I needed. What I need is for them to hire me and not take me too seriously.
Your goal is to infiltrate the CSLA?
No, the Global Lucrum Authority itself.
Though it should have been ridiculous, Damien said it so somberly that Rick found himself taking it seriously.
Okay, why? You've seen what they've done to this world. The rich get richer and the weak get weaker because they keep finding new ways to choke off any chance we have. First, they harvested power itself from the air, robbing us of what many would consider a birthright. Then, you sound like someone else I know.
Rick pushed thoughts of Alger aside and just focused on the man standing opposite him. This isn't about bringing in a new era of warriors in combat, is it? That time is in the past and it's not coming back.
Oh, I'm not pining after some past era that wasn't as good as we pretend. No, I care about what our systems are doing today.
Damien turned away and put his foot up on the side of a flower box, staring over the city.
You see how the systems are all entangled. The demons suffer because of our greed, so their greed gets stronger and humans suffer. It isn't sustainable.
Then what do you suggest? Damien turned his head back just enough to grin at him.
I want to burn it all down.
For a long moment, Rick just stared at him, wondering if this could be another act. Damien was strong, sure, and seemed to have some decent resources, but that was nothing compared to the corporations and governments that enforced the status quo. They'd just recently gotten a reminder of how powerful the representatives of the Global Lucrum Authority could be. Saying something like that was insanity.
You look at me like I'm crazy, but who was the one feeding his blood to the poor downtrodden toad demons? I want to help them too. I'm just thinking a bit bigger.
Rick sighed and decided he needed to take this seriously.
If you're trying to recruit me for a suicidal attempt to fight the GLA, you're going to be disappointed. I'm not an idiot, Rick. I plan to be working toward this for years, even decades. But this is an important first step, because there aren't many chances to be properly employed by the GLA. All I want is for you to help me win, and maybe keep a bit of sympathy for my cause when things go down.
And what happens then? You crash the world economy?
It doesn't have to be that dramatic. We had an economy before Lucrum was controlled like this, and we can have one afterward. What do you say? Isn't that a worthier goal than winning a merits contest?
You, Rick said slowly, are crazy. But I trust you just a bit more than I trust our bosses, or just about any corporation.
I won't go talking about this, and I think we can work together for the merit competition at least.
I don't think I'd want a job with the GLA even if I could manage it. Just this has been stressful enough.
I suppose I'll take it.
Damien stuck out a hand to shake, but Rick ignored it.
All right, what is it going to take for me to seal this agreement? I thought I'd made it clear enough from the beginning that I intend to compensate you for your trouble.
Rick took a step back and just thought about it for a bit. He didn't think he was making a huge mistake with this. Damien was either delusional or a very long-term thinker, but either way, it didn't have much immediate impact on their lives. What mattered was that he had a potentially useful ally and one source of uncertainty in his life had been removed.
Maybe he should remove a second.
You said that you did research on all of the top candidates, Rick said slowly.
Does that include Jack? Of course. Nasty piece of work. Local mercenary from Branton, had some ugly juvenile cases, but has kept out of prison as an adult. Mostly kept to smaller time stuff, but the American Basilisk hired him for this. Probably to get a man inside local CSLA business.
Wait, the American Basilisk? That's the connection.
I know he might seem a bit apocryphal, but...
So that's why he's after me. Rick rubbed his forehead irritably. This relative I fought must have been one of the Basilisk's fighters in the tournament, so I have an actual mobster after me. I guess I should be grateful that it isn't another hit job. Damien just examined him with raised eyebrows for a long time, as if trying to figure out if it was a joke, then gave a strange smile.
"You're talking about the American basilisk very casually. Guess you're a more interesting man than my research indicated."
"I'm doing my best not to be interesting. I'll cooperate within the bounds of the law, but I don't want to attract the attention of either side."
"Then we have an agreement."
"A bit of one." Rick stuck out his hand, and Damien shook it firmly. "Like I said, you might be crazy, but I trust you more than them. For this merit contest, we can work together. What you do after that is up to you."
"That will do just fine."
Damien smiled, then put a hand over his shoulder to guide him back to the elevator.
"Now, let's buy you an overpriced gift."
Chapter 38. Forgotten Techniques in the Library. Melissa couldn't help but feel a skip in her step as they finally drew near the Branton Public Library. She had very dim, positive memories of the place from her childhood, Uncle Frank taking her there on one of his rare visits. Since then, she'd done more of her research at school or on the internet. The idea that there was potentially such a valuable resource still available to her.
"You know," she said as she glanced over at her brother, "it's odd that they didn't talk about the public libraries more in school, if they're such a great resource."
"Yeah, it's odd." Rick frowned as if to himself and did his usual little half-shrug when he wasn't quite sure. "I know some people say that it's because so many sects and corporations have influence on the public school system. They still don't like the fact that libraries make so much information free, so they try to hinder them. I haven't researched it a lot, but..."
"A corporate conspiracy, then."
She shook her fist in mock rage.
"Let's fight the power, brother."
She thought that'd get at least a smile from him, but her brother just looked thoughtful. There was definitely something he had in mind that he hadn't shared with her yet. His brow was a bit furrowed, not as if he had a serious concern, but something was definitely distracting him. Odd that it had just appeared now, since he'd seemed fine on their way over.
"Rick, is something actually up?"
"You just made me think of my meeting yesterday. It was weird." He glanced around, but not like he was thinking of hiding something. After a while, he gave her an odd look she hadn't seen before. "Damien is, a character. I should tell you more about him sometime, but not here."
"Huh. Okay."
She narrowed her eyes at him, trying to figure that out. Either he needed to figure something out, or he had a strong reason not to get into it. "But hey, I got a very nice pill out of it that I'll take when the right time comes. It's called the Great Wheel Heaven and Earth Realm-Shattering Pill."
"Are you serious, or..."
"Serious?
Geez, they really went all in on that name."
Melissa looked ahead to the library as they finally reached the grounds.
"But I guess we can pop pills later. For now, I'm curious to meet this side chick you won't tell me about."
Rick stared at her with a baffled look that made her giggle.
"Side? Listen, I barely know Heather. She's helped me with techniques a few times, and that's it." "Mm-hmm, sure. A likely story."
She smirked, glad that she'd gotten her brother out of his weird funk. This could be a really fun trip, or at least she hoped so.
"So anyway, where's the secret technique vault?"
They passed the front reading area, desks, computers, and other things. It all seemed like normal stuff, and Melissa had to wonder if a place like this could really contain anything that valuable. Obviously, she trusted her brother's judgment. It was just a bit hard to imagine. Eventually, they caught sight of Heather. It was obviously her, just from her brother's short description. She had short, neon green hair and a black top that she managed to make look really cute. Her arms were covered in vine-like tattoos, some of them ending in flowers with skulls. What actually caught Melissa's attention most was a pin she had on her belt, a bright pink anarchy symbol.
"Rick!"
Heather grinned when she saw him, though not in a remotely flirty way.
"Fucking A, I'm glad to see you. Please, tell me that we can open the techniques archive. This place has been really damn boring lately."
"We're headed there, but not for me this time." Rick stepped aside and gestured to Melissa, a bit stiffly. "Heather, meet Melissa." The woman seemed to see her for the first time, looked between them, then smiled.
"Oh, hi. Is this your girlfriend?" "Seriously?"
Melissa gave her a side eye.
"Do you not see the family resemblance?" "Oh, shit, sorry. So she's your mother?"
Melissa decided that she liked Heather. Unfortunately, Rick didn't seem to find it nearly as funny, just saying,
Melissa is my younger sister.
Shit, I'm being a bad influence. I mean, shoot. Darn it. Oh my.
Melissa covered her mouth with one hand and grabbed her brother's sleeve.
Brother, she said a naughty no-no word. She must be some sort of brazen strumpet.
Heather grinned back at her.
Okay, I have no idea what you want, but I'm game. Let's fucking do this.
They headed into one of the back hallways of the library, which looked perfectly normal, until there was a huge freaking metal door. Heather picked through keys at her belt before wrenching the door open. Melissa noted that it didn't come easily and was probably heavier than it looked. She didn't have her brother's habit of checking out generation rates, but she suspected that Heather was no lightweight. Inside, the lights revealed a huge collection of books, scrolls, and even some animal hides. It was an impressive display that looked way more like what Melissa had been expecting. Yet, just a quick walk away, there were teenagers trying to get around porn blockers on the public computers. Life was funny like that.
All right, so what are we looking for?
Heather turned around to face them and put her hands on her hips. Melissa glanced to her brother, but when he just looked back at her, she decided that maybe she could take the lead after all.
I just finished my CLAT, and I'm hoping to join the Young Lucrum Artists of America. But right now, my portfolio is really mundane. I need something that will use what I have to help me stand out. Well, that's vague as hell, but I'm happy to work with it. Anything else, oh elder brother?
Rick shrugged. The obvious issue Heather needed to understand was her lucrum void, but he wouldn't just reveal that. She has a decent combat core and some excess generation rate to put to use, but not enough for a full set of specialized combat cores. The ideal technique would be something that can function well on its own, but wouldn't be made obsolete by future development. Dang, he'd really thought it through. Melissa had paid attention in LE classes and thought she had a good grasp of lucrima theory, but her brother had the right instincts. Meanwhile, Heather just nodded in response.
That's a tall order, but not impossible. I'm sure we can find something. I'll start by pulling up some basic techniques, and we'll see if any of them catch your eye.
Great. Thanks. While she moved away, Rick turned to her and spoke in a lower voice. I don't have to go yet, but if you're fine on your own, I'll leave for work.
Yeah, you can definitely go.
Dropping any act, Melissa reached out and squeezed his hands briefly.
Thanks for making the introductions, Rick. I'll probably ask for your advice as I try to make a decision, but I'm not going to decide in a day, so don't let me keep you from work.
He nodded and left quickly, leaving Melissa smiling after him. She'd managed to stay lighthearted, and she really had enjoyed their walk, but truthfully, she was nervous. Emily had called her to comment on this Jack character, and Melissa thought that Emily was right. Her brother was too accustomed to the more violent end of fighter culture and might be underestimating the threat. If she wasn't going to be a liability anymore, Melissa needed to start by picking a great technique. She looked back around the room, then eagerly went to go find the librarian. Heather brought her a set of different techniques, and Melissa spent a while just reading through them. There were a lot more crazy things than she expected, and some of the names she tucked away in her head for later, but none of them really jumped out at her as the one. She worried that might make her seem too picky, but Heather wasn't even slightly bothered. Apparently, she'd just gotten the first set to get a sense for what Melissa liked. Over the next several days, Melissa spent most of her time at the library, both meditating in preparation and looking over various techniques. Heather couldn't always help, since she had an actual job to do, but Melissa came to enjoy the search on its own. The archive room was surprisingly large and filled with little corners that would be fun to explore just on their own. One day, however, she was just sitting back in one of the chairs and balancing a book on her head. She'd found a technique called the Hellfire Wreath that sounded amazing, but it was crazy difficult. Not just something she'd need to train for a long time to use, it was something that would require her to dedicate her life to a specific path of combat. Being able to protect herself was one thing, but devoting herself wholly to combat when life contained so much else. Melissa was glad when Heather walked into the archive.
Well, I see you're busy.
The older woman smiled down at her.
That's some great fucking balancing right there. My clan has trained for generations in the art of balancing books on our heads.
Melissa plucked it off her head, in too somber a mood to be amused by her own joke.
Honestly, I'm just realizing that I need to make decisions. When you graduate and get good scores, they talk about how you can do anything, but eventually you have to do something, and that means turning down all the other things. Yeah, I know how that goes. But you have to choose, or you won't live at all.
though Melissa glanced at her, deciding if that line was cheesy enough to mock, she decided not to. No, her mind was actually moving in a different direction.
Heather, your job seems pretty cool. You think I could be a librarian? I'm not saying you couldn't do it, but...
Heather sat down beside her and shrugged.
It's not just sorting books all day. To enter the True Librarian program, you need to have some serious martial competence. Say I don't care about that, and I just want to do normal stuff here. Could I start with volunteering to do stuff around the library and work my way up? You'd think so, but no. You need a degree to even apply for jobs here, and I'm not talking an easy one. Probably 6 years minimum. Ugh, higher education is such bullshit.
Melissa grabbed a different book and headbutted it. Meanwhile, Heather just smirked at her.
Such language. I'm corrupting the youths.
They were quiet for a while, Melissa just holding the book to shade her eyes and keeping them closed for a bit. She had tons of good options, so she wasn't really that frustrated. But she was young and didn't have a huge generation rate to waste. If she wanted a truly great option, it seemed like she'd need to make sacrifices of some kind.
Melissa.
Heather's voice sounded strangely serious, prompting her to sit up properly and look.
What? Where did you get this book?
The librarian held up an old volume, and Melissa squinted at it a bit before remembering.
Oh, that one was in a really dusty stack in one of the corners. Not of the main part, but of that little room. What's the purpose of that room, by the way? It wasn't labeled or anything. Ah, those books are... well...
Sensing a target, Melissa sat forward and grinned.
Banned, illegal, secret, forbidden techniques that should have been consigned to the flames to destroy their dark powers?
Heather laughed awkwardly.
Not like that, just techniques that have fallen out of favor.
She flipped through the book, which Melissa hadn't really had a chance to look at much, and then held it open to one page.
Take a look at this. The skill is called Slave Catcher's Gambit. You want to take a guess when it was created and why it's not exactly popular anymore? Oh, wow.
Melissa stared at the drawing, which featured a ring of aura with spikes pointing inward around the neck of a man.
Yeah, I get it. Is the technique itself actually bad in some way? Like, in history, I read that they did some pretty brutal stuff during slavery. It's not one of those. As far as I know, it's a pretty good technique for binding someone. But if you seriously tried to use it these days, you'd be torn apart by a mob.
Heather glanced at the drawing herself and gave an awkward shrug.
Well, not literally, but you'd be making enemies for no reason, and maybe some friends you didn't want. Why deal with that when there are modern techniques that can do similar things without the baggage? Yeah, I completely get what you're saying there, but... Oh dear, am I going to regret leaving you alone in here? Hear me out!
Melissa raised her hands and looked over the other books she'd taken from that corner.
Would it be possible to take one of those techniques and rework it so that it didn't have any bad associations? I mean, I'm not saying that I could do that, but a Lucrum engineer.
She almost said that her brother was dating one, but wasn't actually sure if Emily would help with something like this.
In theory, but it'd probably be more trouble than it's worth.
Heather narrowed her eyes.
Yeah, I think I'm going to regret this so fucking much.
Melissa just grinned and then adopted as innocent of an expression as possible. Once the librarian left, she began looking through the section of forgotten books. Some of them were outdated, some offensive, and some just bizarre, but she had a theory. If she wanted something distinctive, what better place to look than in techniques that had been ignored for a long time? It started with a striking picture, a woman striding across a field surrounded by a burning aura. Normally, the diagrams were not the best place to start, but as Melissa read the surrounding text, she found herself increasingly fixated on the idea. The creator of the technique believed in a lot of nonsense, yet it seemed that the technique itself merely brought forth what was in a person's innermost being. She was glad she was alone, because Melissa was sure she was grinning. Chapter 39. Meeting with Tom. As Rick got ready to go out and meet Tom for the first time in ages, he reflected on an odd irony. Emily was his girlfriend, whereas Tom was just someone he'd met in the underground fighting ring, sometimes fighting against, but more often with. In addition to the semi-illegal fighting, he was associated with people who Rick preferred to forget. Yet, given how things were lately,
this meeting was less likely to involve getting attacked than a date with Emily.
When Rick had gotten the call from Tom, he'd been surprised how agreeable Tom seemed, despite the amount of time that had elapsed since they last spoke. Though they hadn't talked long, Rick had agreed that they should definitely get together and discuss things. Rick wasn't entirely sure where the conversation would go, but he felt like it could be potentially productive. The location where he was going to meet Tom seemed like a more open, less expensive version of the recluse's retreat training center that Emily preferred. Instead of a garden, it had basketball and tennis courts, though the gym looked rather the same. Beyond the normal amenities that would appear in a recreation center, however, there was a traditional fighting octagon and several reinforced private chambers for sparring. Not exactly what he'd expected. Then again, Tom wasn't what he expected. The huge warrior saw him from across the tennis court and loped to meet him, towel around his neck as if he'd just finished a workout. If anything, his muscles were even larger than before, but Rick was more interested in how his core offensive technique had developed. When Tom got close, he thrust a hand forward and Rick shook it firmly.
"Rick, good to see you again. We miss you in the underground."
"Sorry, but I can't say that I miss the constant risk."
"Oh, it's not so bad once you get into the higher levels. Instead of just being thrown into melees, you start headlining fights that people actually care about."
Tom gave an expansive shrug.
"But I completely get why you might not like it, and I hear you've done well for yourself."
Frowning, Rick searched the other man's face. "What, do people gossip about me?"
"Not really. Most in the underground are starting to forget that you were there, but I still remember the times we fought side by side, so I've been trying to keep tabs on you."
Tom pulled the towel off his shoulders and set it to the side.
"What do you say? You want to try a little spar for old time's sake?"
"Sure, why not?" Rick answered casually, but there was no question in his mind that he'd take the offer. Not only was he curious about Tom's development, the chance to spar with someone like him didn't come about every day. Though Tom moved toward the octagon at first, he then shifted to one of the secured chambers with the entrance around the other side. Rick noted that the walls were ether enchanted and higher quality than he would have expected, given the general look of the training center. Then again, Tom had obviously chosen it for a reason. When they stepped into the chamber, Tom quickly moved to the other side. He hopped a couple times, then cracked his knuckles in one hand. No need for any more chatting, apparently. Deciding to take it as seriously as a real fight, Rick raised both fists close to his head and rushed straight in to close the distance as quickly as possible. Yet to his surprise, Tom didn't send a blast of lightning at him, instead letting him get close before lashing out with a kick. It had a fair amount of power, but it was just a normal kick, so Rick blocked it with one shoulder and forearm. He was still waiting for the real attack, yet Tom followed with a normal punch. Rick irritably knocked it aside and struck back, ramming an elbow into his opponent's stomach. Except Tom caught it, and his defensive core held against Rick's blow. The taller man grinned. So, his raw physical skills had improved, but going up against a hand-to-hand specialist, it was still arrogant. Rick stopped holding back and delivered a swift series of blows. Tom managed to block the first two, but then Rick got an elbow into his upper arm hard enough that the entire limb flinched. After that, he lunged in and landed several body blows. Just as he began an uppercut, he saw something change in Tom's eyes. Rick hurled himself back an instant before a burst of lightning exploded around his opponent. He'd barely landed on his feet when Tom thrust out a hand, this time launching a bolt of power instead of a simple physical attack. Since this was just a spar, Rick braced himself and took it, letting the blast send him skidding back to the other wall. When it faded, he lowered his guard and smiled grimly.
"Okay, so you've advanced too far for me to just take you on with my fists."
Tom put a hand to his neck and cracked it in both directions, then shifted into a different stance. No more fists, his hands were open and flickering with electricity. Rick smiled and charged in. As they sparred, he tried to feel out his opponent's real power. During the multi-tier tournament, Tom had fought as a welterweight, handily winning the entire tier. Now he was obviously a middleweight, though not as strong as Emily. At least, that was Rick's estimate. It was hard to tell when they were both holding back. Had the fight gone to its natural conclusion, Rick was fairly certain he would have lost. It was just too difficult to make up the gap in power when his opponent was equally skilled. Maybe he could have used Melissa's void flame to disrupt his opponent and then strike, but he wasn't going to use that outside of a life-and-death situation. They ended well before they reached that point, Tom lowering his hands and no longer flinging any bolts. Rick was actually disappointed, since he wanted to see more of how his defensive core would fare against such a powerful ability core. Full power bolts might damage the fighting chamber, but he was willing to take that risk. Tom wiped his neck with one towel and tossed another to Rick, who caught it but didn't use it. "Is that it, Tom? Not a bad spar, but I want to see the biggest lightning bolt you can muster."
"Oh, I don't think you do. Come on, hit me with your best shot." "Nice try."
Tom finished with his towel and gave him a knowing smile.
"I have nothing against you, but hitting you with my best would really only benefit you. Plus, I want to keep that in reserve in case we're ever fighting each other in a tournament again."
The flattery was probably meant to distract, and Rick didn't let it, but he accepted that he wasn't going to get his chance.
"You can relax about that. I think I'm done with tournaments." "Maybe that's for the best. Alger has invested a huge amount of lucrum into my development, more than he could possibly have earned from me. I don't want to call him bloodthirsty, but it's like he's hungry for the fights themselves. He starved for something, and no matter how much I fight, it's never quite enough."
That hadn't been the direction Rick had expected the conversation to go, but he wasn't going to let that subject pass by. He stopped on his way to the door to look at Tom. "Speaking of Alger, is he upset with me or something, for fighting against him in the multi-tier tournament?"
"I don't think so."
Tom seemed so surprised by that question that Rick didn't think he was faking.
"He's not even slightly mad about losing the tournament anymore. In fact, if he was irritated about anything, it was that you quit. When you mostly won your tier, you got his attention again."
"Huh." Rick shook his head, not quite sure what to make of it. He was curious, but asking Tom questions when Alger was his patron might not be a good idea. "Thanks for the spar, Tom.
Is your job with the CSLA working out for you? I didn't even think about it when it was posted, but now, I don't know. I might need a change eventually. As much as I like fighting in the arena, I'm not sure I want to do it forever."
"You're doing it for fun, then?"
"And to challenge myself, yes."
Tom shrugged and leaned back against the wall of the chamber.
"Did I ever tell you about why I chose the offensive core that I did?"
"No, you didn't." Rick frowned at him. "Why are you telling me now?"
"I don't know. I just feel like there's no one around me who has their head on straight. I thought you might understand. Come on, get over here and hear me out a bit."
Tom patted the wall beside him, and Rick headed in his direction, though he stayed at a distance with his arms folded. "All right, why an ability core instead of a bodily one?" Tom smiled, though slightly bitterly.
"You got right to the heart of it. I've always been physically huge. In high school, I was getting scouted for all kinds of sports, but after a while, I got to resent it, so I decided to use that to my advantage in a fighting arena. With my size, everyone will be expecting me to be a brawler. The lightning takes them off guard."
"Good strategy. Not so good when you're a public fighter going up against people repeatedly."
"Yeah, I guess that's a bit ironic. What about you, Rick? What brings you to that set of skills?"
Rick didn't like to talk about himself, and in that moment of hesitation, he found himself stopping and thinking back over the conversation. He frowned at Tom. "Why are you getting into all this? We're acquaintances, not friends."
"Do I seem that desperate?"
Tom shrugged awkwardly.
"I don't have a lot of people to confide in these days, so I..."
"No." Rick used a bunion step to get directly in the other man's face and was rewarded with a slight flinch. "No, you're talking for the sake of talking. Are you waiting for something?" He saw a flicker of fear on Tom's face and knew that he was right.
"It's not like that, Rick. Wait, she just wants to talk. She made me get you."
Something about the way he said it sent a chill down Rick's spine. He heard the door to the chamber open behind them and someone stepped inside. Even before he heard the voice, he knew.
"Hello, dearie. Did you miss me?"
Chapter 40. Sharing a Ride. Granny Whitney was exactly as he remembered her. The floral dress, the oversized purse, the hair in that tight little bun, and of course the gentle smile on her face, as if he was a favorite grandson who she was delighted to see and still not sure if she intended to tear out his guts.
You!
Rick's instincts told him to run, but she was blocking the only door, and her threat was more influence than raw power anyway. Why are you here?
I just want to chat, dear boy. I have an offer that I think you'll like.
No, just let me go on with my life.
Her eyes became harder, boring into his.
Don't be tiresome, dearie. I'm not here to harm you, and I'd never do anything so gauche as threatening your sister. Last time I got you to work for me via blackmail, and that turned out all right, didn't it? This time you can actually negotiate your terms.
Rick took a deep breath, accepting that he probably didn't have a choice. It did seem like she expected him to be useful to her, which was all the protection he had. Still, he didn't want to just give in, so Rick turned on Tom angrily.
Why are you doing this? You'd betray me for one of your enemies. It's not like that.
Tom stepped closer, glancing between the two of them nervously.
Look, Alger's demands were relentless and constantly increasing. I thought I could arrange something else, something better, but it didn't go as planned.
Chuckling, Granny Whitney reached up to pat his cheek, though she needed to stretch on the tips of her toes to do so.
Tom here was very obliging in getting himself in debt to me. So when I heard he was going to meet you, I had to give him an opportunity to pay a bit of that debt off, didn't I?
Tom winced. She just wants to talk, Rick. At least, I'm fairly sure.
But you were willing to take that chance with me, Rick said. He reluctantly accepted it and turned to Granny Whitney.
All right, we can talk. What is this all about?
Instead of answering, the old woman turned and headed back out the door, gesturing over her shoulder at them. They moved after her reluctantly, and it occurred to Rick that it was no accident that they had chosen this fighting chamber on the edge of the property. There was only a small passage behind it, and instead of returning to the main area, they left via a small door he hadn't noticed before. The street outside was quiet, almost suspiciously so. Granny Whitney walked to the curb and scrabbled around in her purse for keys before manifesting a Lucrum vehicle. It was different than the previous car, this one a lime green, yet somehow every bit as much of a granny car. She glanced over her shoulder at them.
Hop in, boys. We're just going to go on a little trip so that I can explain better.
Tom climbed into the back seat while Rick hesitated on the sidewalk. He didn't want to get into her car, but he accepted that he wasn't really any more in her power there than in the street. If she had wanted to do something to him, the fighting chamber would have been the ideal place. Eventually, he opened the door and stepped into the front seat. The vehicle immediately rose into the air, some sort of defensive field shimmering into being around it that made the world outside look fuzzy. Granny Whitney sat back with her hands clasped over her purse as if some chauffeur was driving them, then turned to smile at him.
Sorry to do things this way, dearie, but unfortunately you're not so easy to contact these days. All branches of the Lucrum Authority keep their employees under various kinds of scrutiny that are mildly frustrating for my purposes, to say the least.
And so you arranged this meeting. Rick sighed and made himself meet her gaze.
Fine. What do you want?
Oh, but why start so aggressively? I'd much rather begin by talking about what I can do for you.
Granny Whitney smiled at him, her eyes twinkling.
I understand you're having a bit of trouble with a man named Jack. You do seem to collect vendettas, don't you, dearie?
Rick stared at her. You mean that you sent him after me to force me into this? Granny Whitney put a hand to her chest.
Rick, you wound me. Do you really think that I'm the type of old woman who would threaten you with such a crude thug? No, if I wanted to threaten you, I would become exceedingly kind to your dear sister and let you work out the rest. You're a reasonably smart boy, after all.
The obvious threat left Rick grinding his teeth. As the pause stretched, Tom spoke up from the back seat.
She didn't send him, man. Jack is working for the American Basilisk, who's one of her oldest enemies. I'm not sure what she needs from you, but she actually thinks your interests align.
That's right. Such a helpful comment deserves a piece of hard candy.
Though Granny Whitney began looking through her purse, Her next words were clearly directed toward Rick.
I don't care about this Jack fellow, but I do want to see Gerald frustrated. That's the American basilisk, if you don't recall. So I think we can actually work together here.
Rick didn't answer at first, looking through the haze around the car to try to figure out where they were going. Somewhere outside Branton, and they were picking up speed as they got higher and further from the center of the city, but he wasn't sure where. For now, he put it out of his mind and focused on the old woman rummaging through her purse menacingly. "This conversation is pointless until you tell me what you want from me. Out with it."
"All right, dearie. If you insist on not chatting with a lonely old woman, we can talk business."
Granny Whitney flicked something from out of her purse into the back seat, then focused on him with dark, beady eyes.
"These exercises by the CSLA are interfering with one of my businesses. I need you to abuse your authority working with them to remove that interference. In exchange, I will have Jack murdered for you. If you perform well enough, I'll provide additional lucrum-based compensation."
Not having expected his demand to actually work, Rick swallowed and stared back at her. Well, it was all out on the table now. He forced his brain not to flinch from the implications and responded to what mattered. "I don't want him killed. I just want him to stop attacking me."
"Trying to bargain for a larger lucrum award, are you? I think it'd be cleaner to have him killed, but if you insist, I do have some lovely little pills you might like."
He had actually been more concerned that she would implicate him in the crime and blackmail him just like before. The most logical thing would have been to refuse her categorically and leave. There was definitely part of his mind that said it would be safer to open the door and hurl himself at the ground than to work with her. Yet he didn't think that she would give up that easily. So, what business, and how is my job relevant?
"Drugs, dearie. I have many industrious little worker bees making all manner of drugs outside the city, where the residue isn't so easily tracked. Unfortunately, all these surveyors moving about have increased security, and I've lost a few workers thanks to them."
"I don't control CSLA policy. I'm just working not to get fired."
"But you do have their proprietary technology to locate, analyze, and eliminate lucrum anomalies."
Granny Whitney sat back primly, eyes fixed at him like a predator.
"I need you to locate an anomaly without noticing anything suspicious. After that, I will need you to run a few packages for me. Those lost workers have attracted some unfortunate attention."
Rick took a deep breath, wondering if he was insane for even considering the offer. Of course, one thing was absolutely unacceptable. "I'm not going to run drugs for you. I'm willing to do my job and not go out of my way to interfere with your operations, but I refuse to do anything illegal."
"That's no fun, dearie. I could have eliminated Jack for you so thoroughly and effectively."
"Don't you want to do that anyway, to humiliate the American basilisk?" Granny Whitney gave him a small smile, her eyes crinkling in a way that was both grandmotherly and terrifying.
"Good to see you're still thinking. Honestly, I was hoping you could set up a situation where I could murder him without suspicion, just to send a lovely message. But if we can't do that, I would actually prefer to get rid of him in a way that will upset his boss."
"I don't want to get involved in anything excessive. I'm dealing with a lot right now." Rick rubbed his forehead briefly, then glanced back at Tom, but the other man was completely silent. After thinking about just how much trouble Granny Whitney could cause him, much less Melissa, he decided that he didn't have a choice. "So you need me to get rid of a lucrum anomaly. Where and how?"
"Below us, actually."
Granny Whitney flicked a finger, and the windows slid down. Except they continued sliding, so the doors themselves faded away, leaving a large expanse of open sky on either side of the car. They hovered over an expanse of wilderness that looked much the same as many other areas outside Branton.
"We took our little ride mostly because I needed a secure place for this conversation, but we've also reached the location. Take a good look, dearie, because I don't want to give you any incriminating evidence."
Rick gripped the edge of the car tightly and leaned out slightly to get a better look. There weren't a lot of identifying characteristics, but he'd roughly kept track of their position. "Even if I know the approximate area, finding the anomaly can be difficult."
"I trust you'll be an industrious young man."
and all you need me to do is report it normally.
There are a few other details we'll have to discuss.
Granny Whitney only chuckled when he turned to glare at her.
Simple details of technique, dear boy. No new changes to our agreement. If you fulfill your end, I'll arrange something to deal with Jack.
How exactly?
By putting a little pressure on Gerald. You see, I imagine that he hired Jack in order to get someone inside the CSLA who isn't associated with him. Having that information leaked would be very inconvenient for him, so he'd be displeased to learn that Jack is drawing so much attention to himself. With the right word whispered in the right ear, he could be out of your hair for good.
That might be about the best deal that he was going to get. Rick thought that he had no choice but to accept the offer, but he remained silent for a long time, trying to think of an alternative.
Granny's time is very valuable, dearie.
Her fingers tightened on her purse.
I have no vendetta against you, truly. You might have been a pain in my ass, but you gave me what I needed and you could be counted on. Do this one thing for me, and I'll be out of your life for good.
Rick scowled at her. I thought that was the deal the last time.
Oh, but we're only meeting again because you have the CSLA position. Without that, you'd have nothing I want, and I'd leave you alone. You don't think the position is going to last long, do you? Believe me, you don't have much more time to get in my good graces.
All right, fine. Rick closed his eyes and wished to whoever was listening that this wasn't a mistake. Let's talk about the details. Chapter 41. Paying Granny's Dues. Even though he wasn't technically any safer, Rick felt relieved when he finally stepped out of the car. Granny Whitney gave them a cheery wave, and then her vehicle shot up into the sky, disappearing above the clouds. Just like that, he had underworld obligations again. Setting aside those concerns, Rick turned to look at Tom. The larger man shifted uncomfortably, as if he wanted to start walking away but was held by something. Possibly guilt. Though Rick was pissed off at him, he knew that venting those feelings wouldn't accomplish anything. A moment later, he realized that there was actually a better way to exploit the situation. A long time ago, after I lost an arm helping you win a fight, you promised to help restore it. Rick eyed Tom coolly. This is what you had in mind for repaying me. Look, I didn't... Tom winced and avoided eye contact, but didn't move away. Granny Whitney took care of your injury, and after that, we were on opposite teams. And now, I didn't want it to be this way, I just... Though Rick felt a bit dirty, like he was taking a page out of Granny Whitney's book, he knew he couldn't afford to play this situation clean. I know she pushed you into a bad situation, but now you've put me in a position where I could very well end up maimed or killed. You deserve better than that. Sorry. If you really want to apologize, make it up to me with your technique. Rick stepped closer and stared up into Tom's eyes. I want to test my defensive core against your lightning technique under completely controlled conditions. Tom blinked in surprise. Now? No, not now. I need to take care of Granny Whitney's problem, and I'm betting things will get worse with Jack before they get better. But soon. Okay. Tom took a deep breath and nodded to him, his nervousness giving way to a hard expression. After doing this to you, that's fair. You have my number, so just call me. Thanks, I'll do that. Rick was about to leave, but hesitated and looked back at the other man. Tom, you should already know this, but you could use a reminder. Making yourself useful to her will just get you pulled in deeper. You need to make a deal that lets you get out. Tom nodded, but didn't respond. They stared at each other a while longer, then they headed in opposite directions. After walking for a time, his thoughts overflowing, Rick manifested his bike and hopped on. They'd been dropped off not far from his apartment, but he didn't want to wait any longer to get started. Along the way, he thought over the messages he'd seen recently at work. The quotas had been getting more difficult, and judging from some of the threads, a few surveyors had been fired. He had a comfortable buffer thanks to the allowance from his time in the demon realm, but it was obvious that his life was going to get more difficult. That was before he even thought about Granny Whitney's demands, though at least she would let him take credit for the find. Back at the apartment, he found Melissa sitting in the middle of the living room floor, surrounded by several books. They all looked like old technical manuals from the library, some of them a bit strange. She glanced up and grinned at him, though, so he decided that she must know what she was doing.
Hey, Rick. Meeting go okay?
No. Got kind of a shitty surprise, but we should talk about it later.
That's cool. I have a lot on my mind.
Melissa frowned and then pointed to the small table.
Right. Lisa dropped off some more stuff for you. It's not just mixtures this time. She wants you to give something to whoever you got the jackalope extract from.
Thanks, sis. Rick padded over and found the box from Lisa. In addition to the usual complement of experiments, there was an odd package that was actually vacuum-sealed. Presumably a derivative of the extract that she wanted Adsela to test in some way, because there was no note or explanation beyond what Melissa had said. Rick stared down at the box, wondering if he'd seriously messed things up. Lisa seemed so distant these days. Even though it had been an awful and stressful period of his life, he missed the time when he could just enjoy hanging out with various friends. The peace made everything more complicated. Deciding that he would get out to the Peakless Wildlife Refuge later, Rick instead just put all the mixtures aside. Instead, he spent time online researching the area Granny Whitney had indicated, trying to get a feel for the area before he went out to survey. It was too far to reach that day, but the actual area wasn't that large and had some old abandoned buildings, so hopefully it wouldn't be a pain to fulfill her request. As soon as he thought it, he regretted it. Not likely. Rick sighed and went through his exercises before going to sleep. The next day, Rick got up bright and early to head out to the site. Though the bike ride was refreshing, everything else was not. By the time he arrived, the sun was beating down unpleasantly, and he knew that it would only get worse. When he first made an attempt to use the surveying technique, he got a large amount of feedback. Not natural feedback either, but a nasty residue that he could almost feel instinctively. No wonder no one had located the anomaly yet. He had to wonder if there even was one, or if this was part of some trickier scheme by Granny Whitney, but decided that was paranoia. Locating anomalies was the only real thing she was likely to want from him, since she had access to plenty of stronger fighters. For an hour, he simply moved through the region, surveying periodically to get a sense for the distortions. It wasn't a random route, however, as he moved to target the buildings he'd seen from the maps online. Even if those didn't contain the anomaly, they would serve as good reference points, and he might be able to get some shade if the sun became oppressively hot. The first of the buildings came into sight sooner than he expected. A vast concrete structure, still in solid shape except for the stains creeping up the side. Huge painted letters read, Branton Lucrum Depository. Or at least that was what he thought it said, guessing about missing pieces. It had been a long time since Lucrum had been stored in such crude containers, so it wasn't a surprise that the building was abandoned. As he got closer, he found himself wondering about why it had been so far outside the city. He didn't think the city had moved all that much over time. Maybe it was to discourage anyone from making attempts on it. He did see a few bits of concrete rubble that might once have been defenses. Fortunately, he was close to the entrance, so he headed for it. The doors were locked with a rusted chain, so after checking the windows, he left it for now. If necessary, he could break through the chain later, but hopefully that wouldn't be required. When he tried the technique again, the surveying aura vibrated strangely. Probably not an anomaly, but he couldn't put his finger on why exactly he thought that. It was just instinct from his work so far. Instead, he headed around the side of the massive building, partially surveying more and partially marveling at the size. Technology really had come far to store lucrum so much more efficiently. For a moment, he wondered how they had ever done it in the ancient world. Then he realized that, of course, they didn't store it in the same way. Lucrum was always in their bodies or in the environment. Though he mostly checked the surveying area between his hands, Rick made sure to keep watch on his surroundings as well. Not so much to search for threats as because there was a lot of broken glass and occasionally a rusty piece of metal jutting from the earth. His defensive core wouldn't be hurt by those, but he still didn't want to run into them. Then he spotted it. A small, furry body lying in the dirt. Rick glanced around and then advanced cautiously.
To his surprise, it was a jackalope. It had been dead for some time, though he didn't know enough about decomposition to guess exactly how long. The strange thing was that a hole had been torn through its head. What kind of creature could create an injury like that? Certainly not another jackalope, and a dragon or wolf would have left a bite. Maybe a lucrum-using scorpion. He and Melissa had watched a documentary about the Pueblo assassin once, but he didn't think they had any of those this far north. Rick carefully checked the area, wondering what might have caused it. He didn't see any animal tracks and didn't know a damn thing about tracking in any case. There was a broken bottle lying nearby that didn't look like it had any dirt on it, so he headed in that direction. There was a broken concrete wall ahead that could easily have hidden an animal, but as Rick circled it from a distance, he realized that he had entirely the wrong idea. Instead of an animal's nest, he found an old camper. It looked in bad shape, but was still functional. Worse, there was blue smoke emerging from the top, so he realized what he was dealing with. It was a fucking meth lab, and it was making meth with lucrum somehow, judging from the wild distortions of the aura between his hands. Dumped waste probably explained why the area was distorted, but he was more distracted by the idea of what lucrum meth would even do to a person. Wouldn't that be horribly lethal? Meth itself took enough of a toll. Wouldn't enhancing it make it burn straight through a person's body? Then again, if people were strong enough, sometimes normal drugs ceased to have an effect. Were these drugs for addicted fighters, the truly desperate, or something even more nefarious? Knowing Granny Whitney, probably all of the above. A gunshot rang out, and Rick felt pain in his shoulder. He immediately turned and spotted a wild-looking man emerging from an abandoned-looking outhouse. Judging from the sores on his face, he might be sampling his own supply, but more importantly, he was holding a gun. Rick reached up and rubbed his shoulder. His defensive core had crumpled the bullet before it damaged his skin, so that wasn't a major threat, but surely a drug manufacturer had better weapons. At that moment, the man finished pulling up his pants, dropped the pistol, and leveled a shotgun.
"That was a warning shot."
The man stared at him with wild eyes, then gestured with his shotgun.
"This baby fires lucrum bullets."
"Look, I'm not here to bother you." Rick raised his hands in the hope that it would make the man calm down. If the shotgun really fired lucrum, that could be dangerous. "Granny Whitney sent me to take care of a little problem."
"Eh? Who?"
The man's disbelief was so stark that Rick found himself believing it. Of course, it probably made sense that Granny Whitney only operated several levels separated from someone like this. "It doesn't matter. The main thing is I'm not here for you. I just want to do some work and go."
"You might..."
The man licked at the sores on his lips, his hands twitching as he aimed the gun unsteadily.
"You might report me. I'm not supposed to kill anyone, but..."
Rick burst into a bunion step, shooting mostly sideways in case the man fired in reaction. Yet the drug manufacturer just looked shocked, staring at the place where he'd been. So Rick used another bunion step to zigzag back to the man, grabbing the shotgun out of his hands. "If I wanted to kill you, I could." Rick stared down at him, and the man quailed. "But I'm not here for that. Just stay out of this area for the next few days."
"But we need to get a batch made."
"You're attracting too much attention here. Without my work, you're going to get caught. I don't care what you do, but I don't want to see you again, okay?" Since the man was trembling in fear, Rick waited for him to nod in agreement, then handed him back the shotgun. The man quickly retreated to the camper, and though Rick was on guard for a treacherous attack, none came. He waited for a while, and though the camper didn't move, the blue smoke did begin to fade away. That would have to be good enough. As Rick backed away from it, he wondered just what he was doing. He'd never been a vigilante, and there was plenty of drug use in his extended family that no one ever imagined reporting. Yet actively working to keep meth manufacturers in business, it might be hypocritical to make them move out of sight, but he needed to do this or Granny Whitney would punish him. The region continued to give off strange readings as he surveyed it. Had he made this attempt when he'd just started the job, he almost certainly would have given up. Yet now he had a feeling that he could see patterns in all the noise. It wasn't just dumps of byproducts from drug manufacturers, he thought he saw traces of an anomaly as well. Rick began heading out in a wider circle, periodically using Emily's variation of the surveying technique in order to build a mental map of the whole region. Since it wasn't terribly large, he thought that he could cover most of it and then have a clear idea which area contained the anomaly. Once he had it narrowed down, it wouldn't be that hard. In theory. Eventually, Rick spotted another building, a shack out in the middle of nowhere. He actually wasn't sure what it was, other than that he assumed it was now being used to make drugs. Bracing his defensive core again, Rick headed toward it.
"Hello? If you're thinking of attacking me, I'm not here to fight."
His call went unanswered, and he tried to search for any Lucrema souls in the area. Nothing, though a skilled fighter could be hiding. A wolf howled in the distance, and Rick straightened in surprise. He looked around as if expecting it to be right beside him, but of course the wolf wasn't anywhere near. Wild animals who weren't rabid or desperate, or jackalopes, tried to stay away from people after all. There was still no sign of anyone nearby or in the shack. There was a very crude latch holding the rusty tin door closed. When Rick's knock went unanswered, he kicked the door open. It was shockingly easy, the door slamming open to reveal an empty shack. He stepped inside cautiously, looking around the dim chamber. He spotted some rusty silverware and a few cracked syringes that he guessed had been used for drugs at some point, but they looked extremely old. A thick layer of dust covered everything, rising as he walked in. Apparently, this location had been abandoned in favor of the rolling lab. Though he checked through the few cabinets in the room, it contained nothing of note. Just in case, Rick bent down to survey for the anomaly, but there was nothing amiss. Well, it was another point in his mental map of the region. He got up, feeling strangely dizzy, and headed back out the door. Rick stepped into the cool night. He reeled in surprise, looking around him, yet it seemed to have inexplicably become midnight. Could the time have gotten away from him so drastically? It had been getting later, but there was no way it could be later than evening. He couldn't deny the night sky overhead, dark except for too many gleaming stars, yet there had to be another explanation. Maybe he dozed off in the shack. Rick got out his phone to check the time, yet the screen only flickered meaninglessly. At that moment, he heard a howl, much louder than before. He looked up and stared into the eyes of an enormous silver wolf. Chapter 42. Endangered Cloud Wolves. His first reaction was to run, but he held it down in case the wolf might give chase. His second reaction was to attack, but he forced that one back since it also wasn't attacking him. It sat on its haunches, staring at him with unnaturally silvery eyes. Since there was no immediate threat, Rick paused to look at the wolf more carefully. It was definitely larger than he thought wolves should be, with shimmering fur and highlights around the face that were almost liquid silver. The eyes were dark, though, deep pools that either reflected stars or were filled by them. He knew that it must be an unnatural creature, but he had no idea what it was or why it was so close. The wolf let out a low growl, not necessarily aggressive, yet it still made his hair stand on end. It began to move toward him, and Rick realized that he couldn't let this go. Hoping to intimidate the creature away, he summoned his aura into a flaming presence around him. In response, the wolf snarled, the peace of the previous moment transforming into animal fury. It rushed for him, shockingly quick, and Rick barely managed to react. There wasn't time for a counterattack. He just managed to duck aside. The wolf flashed past him, a silver shadow in the night, and landed behind him. He realized that he had only a split second to change the course of the fight. Rick launched himself backward with a bunion step even as he reached into his pocket and pulled out the ether cage that he'd gotten at the refuge. When he ended his rush of speed, he was surprised to see that the wolf was turning to look at him, jumping back in shock. It really was fast. Not fast enough, though. Rick flashed around it with two more bursts of speed, then hurled the ether cage. When it had nearly struck, the wolf snapped at it, but at that moment the cage manifested, pale white arms extending all around the wolf.
It pinned the animal until it dropped to the ground, then the cage slowly expanded so it didn't constrict the wolf painfully. Suddenly, Rick was standing in the middle of the wilderness with the sun shining overhead. He rubbed his forehead, trying to believe what he'd seen. The wolf couldn't have controlled time. That wasn't possible. So had it created an illusion? Or had it all been in his head in some way? For now, the wolf lay in the small cage, slumped against the bars. At first, Rick thought that it might have been faking, but it seemed that the cage itself had knocked the animal unconscious. Maybe some sort of reaction to the ether. He didn't really understand it, but he'd heard them talk about reactions at the refuge. In any case, it was unconscious now, but he had no idea how long it would stay that way. After frowning down at the cage for a while, Rick decided that he had no choice. He awkwardly carried the cage at first, his eyes nervously flicking between the wolf and the ground. It was frustratingly slow, but eventually he got back to the highway and managed to reach a bus stop. Getting on the bus took a serious argument with the bus driver that the wolf was actually an injured support dog, but it got him close enough to Branton. He used his new ether tier to get a taxi driver who wouldn't ask questions and rode all the way to the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. Along the way, he realized that underneath its glorious silver coat, the wolf was actually thinner than he thought. He could see its ribs as it breathed slowly, and one of its legs had a pus-filled injury that looked like it needed medical attention. Hopefully they could do something for it. When Rick walked into the main refuge office, for once, Adsela was at the desk. She looked up with a smile, but had barely started her greeting when she saw the wolf and her eyes widened.
Holy shit. Wemmy, get in here.
I told you not to call me.
Wemelat walked into the room, wiping his hands off on a rag, and trailed off as he saw the cage. Both of them just stared at it, eyes wide. Rick awkwardly set the cage down and stared back. I don't think this is a normal wolf.
No shit, it's not a normal wolf.
Wemelat rushed down to kneel beside the cage, reaching out and almost touching its fur, but pulling back.
This is a cloud wolf. They're critically endangered. Where did you find it?
Rick paused uncomfortably long. Though he didn't want to lie, telling the truth would definitely piss off Granny Whitney, and she might take it out on the refuge staff. He opted for a vague answer.
I was surveying an area that looked like it had been used to make lucrum drugs in the past. Could that have anything to do with it?
It definitely could. I'm surprised it isn't sicker if it was feeding off contaminated lucrum. The stories say cloud wolves had some kind of natural purification system, but I never really believed.
Wimalat looked up at him with a strange expression.
But why did it survive so long, then meet you?
Maybe it chose him.
They all turned sharply to see who had spoken, though Rick recognized the voice was Delson's before spotting the old man. He stood in the doorway of the office, his face blank and unreadable. Though Rick wanted to reply, as Delson walked into the room, he carried with him an air of solemn silence. Eventually, he bent down beside the wolf and settled his hand on its head.
Long ago, cloud wolves were believed to choose their protectors. It is said they became the first dogs. I had always discounted those legends, but...
The old man looked up to stare at Rick.
Whatever its purpose, this means something.
Rick stared back at him, then shook his head.
Bullshit. Why do you keep trying to trick me with the same old tripe?
To his surprise, Delson didn't respond with a grin. Instead, his eyes tightened and his gaze became something both serious and dangerous. From beside the cage, Wemelat stood up and cast Rick an angry glance.
We don't expect you to follow any of our traditions, but we thought you would at least respect them. You've been given a gift and you spit in its face?
I didn't mean...
Rick desperately looked to Adsela, but even she wasn't smiling.
There are limits, Rick.
She shook her head slowly.
Poking fun at traditions is one thing, but there are some things that you shouldn't mock.
After nearly being tripped up so many times, Rick had never expected this. He bowed in contrition.
I'm very sorry. I only thought that...
He trailed off as Delson let out a snicker. The old man shot him a triumphant grin while Adsela gave a little laugh. Even Wimelat lost all sense of tension and just smiled at him good-naturedly.
Rick sighed and let them finish laughing at his expense before he tried to speak. All right, fine, but you're not going to tell me that this is just some normal animal.
Oh, it's a real cloud wolf.
Delson poked the cage with his foot and grunted.
I don't personally give a fuck, but some people care a lot about that sort of thing. For good reason.
Wemelat scowled disapprovingly at his uncle and moved to push him away so he couldn't kick the cage anymore.
I wasn't joking about them being critically endangered. It would actually be irresponsible for us to take care of it here, but we can try to nurse it back to health and let it be introduced into a better-controlled wildlife reserve.
Adsela came from around the desk to crouch by the cage.
Come on, do we absolutely have to? Imagine what we could extract from this thing.
Wemelet stared at her in horror and put his arms around the cage defensively.
Absolutely not. That's a crime against governmental and ethical laws alike. At least let me take some fur. Surely it will shed some, or you'll need to shave it or something.
Stop drooling over it. This is a noble creature, not a body for you to loot.
While the two of them traded barbs, Rick looked back to Delson. The old man had sat down on one of the couches in the entrance chamber and just seemed mildly amused by the whole thing. Rick went to sit down beside him.
Why do you think I actually ran into it, though?
Delson shrugged.
Either it sensed your surveying technique and came to investigate, or maybe it wanted to eat something you were carrying. That sphere they gave you, for example. Maybe that's tasty to a wolf. How the hell should I know?
All right, that makes sense. If Wemelat can take the wolf somewhere safe, then I'm done here. Rick glanced outside and saw that it really had gotten late, given the amount of time it took him to transport the cloud wolf. Since he had Delson here, there was really only one productive thing he could do. I won't ask for any compensation, aside from what I've asked for from the beginning.
Yeah, fine.
Delson glanced over at him with a cool gaze.
I've been thinking, and I'm willing to give you a shot. You might have enough of your generation rate free, maybe not, but you definitely need to improve the rating of your foundation. You do both of those things and come back here, then I'll teach you something.
Good. Thanks.
Rick got up and bowed to him, but the old man just waved him off. After glancing around at the three family members, still bickering